Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Now, another doctor for you know, but this is a very different conversation. Professor Ronan Collins, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brendan.
And Ronan, people will be used to hearing you with your medical hat on, talking about living well and aging well and getting older and stroke medicine and all that. But I suppose, in a way, that we're going to talk about that now, but in a different way. You're going to bring us into the world of fishing, which is a passion of yours and something that I know has really enriched your life. It started as a child in Kinsale, did it?
Yeah, I suppose growing up next to the sea, obviously you're very curious. You're surrounded by water. I think as human beings, we're drawn to water. You know, even our belief systems have a strong link with rivers and the sea. And I suppose I was drawn to that very much, drawn to the nature, the beauty of it. And I suppose fishing was an extension of that to some extent, yes. I think my first memories, I had a granduncle, Tom Cadigan. He kind of was my grandfather in a way, because my grandfathers had died when I was relatively young, and he was a keen fisherman. So I have these, you know, beautiful childhood memories of being out in a boat with a hand line, traditionally fishing for mackerel for summer, like for fishing. And, you know, sad to see the state of mackerel stocks now, but it's a beautiful memory. And from that, I had a growing interest in fishing.
Tell me about the three stages of fishing and where you're at.
Well, I suppose when you're a young child, you just want to catch fish and as many as possible, and be that, you know, with a tiny hooks for dowdlers off the pontoon or crab fishing, to mackerel fishing, you know, to codling in the winter in Kinsale Harbour. You just wanted to catch fish. To eat, obviously, as well. There was a kind of a natural kind of association with fishing and providing, and that was all very wholesome as a child. I think for a period, when you get a little bit narcissistic, you probably get into, I want to catch big fish, and the bigger, the better. And, you know, I did a little bit of that with my best friend, Robert Hurley in Kinsale, and we toured the world a bit doing a little bit of that. I've mixed feelings about some of the big
this
game fishing.
This is marlin and that kind of big game fishing, you see, off big boats, yeah.
Well, I never hooked up onto marlin, maybe, thankfully, but I've lost a fair few sailfish in my time, as they used to call me Joan at one stage off the east coast of Africa. But I had mixed feelings. We were tagging and releasing the fish at the time. But when I think back to Kinsale and the origins of big game fishing in Kinsale, when they had a fleet of 14, 15 shark boats.
Remember the sharks used to be hanging up outside down by the Trident Hotel in Kinsale. Like, it'd be a treat if you went down on a Sunday and there were sharks hanging there sometimes.
Yeah, and it was awfully misguided of us to be killing these sharks just for a trophy photograph, then to be thrown over the side into the water. It really was misguided. And I think fishing and the fishing community, the angling community, are in a much better place as regards that now.
Okay, so that's stage two. Is you want big, difficult
big fish.
What's stage three then?
I think stage three, you start, I suppose, sometime in the early 90s, I saw that great movie, River Runs Through It, and Brad Pitt is playing the author's part, Paul McLean, and he's fly fishing in Montana, and there's just this beautiful scene where you see the fly line swirling behind them, almost meditative. The movie talks about him getting into a rhythm all of his own. And I think that speaks to the mindfulness and the wellness associated with fly fishing. And I got into fly fishing, which essentially, if you're fly fishing for salmon, you're trying to catch the most difficult fish by the most difficult means possible, because salmon aren't eating. You're just trying to provoke a reaction.
So it's a psychological game with the salmon.
It is. But for me, I suppose fishing is about fishing, not as much about catching. The tug is the drug, that moment of adrenaline. But I think when I'm fishing, I'm as, you know, as Clodagh just spoke about her Buddhist temple. I think that river is my Buddhist temple. Jeremy Irons spoke about this morning, and I agree, he does have a gorgeous voice. He spoke about that, you know, seeking that inner peace.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, I'm a little bit stressful at times at work. I think when I'm on the river and I'm fishing and I'm watching nature around me, and the river is swirling and gurgling and riffles and rifts around me, it's almost meditative, and maybe in a little bit way hypnotizing. and you just feel yourself immersed and maybe being at one with nature.
You would stop off in the car on the way home from work sometimes, would you, and kind of have a quick fish, yeah?
Yeah, so luckily I live near the Dodder, which is a jewel in the city. I don't think many people realise that this is a wild brown trout fishery and indeed salmon in the lower reaches. It's a beautiful river and we obviously need to protect this river. But yeah, sometimes on the way home, I'd have the rod in the back of the car in the summer and I'd stop and I'd just walk down the more kind of, there's some very isolated sections of the river, even between the dropping well there and the bridge in Orwell. And you know, it's just a beautiful little walk along the river there to casting the fly. You know, I might catch a little brown trout and release them, obviously, and things like that. It's beautiful. There's kingfishers there, dippers there, beautiful wildlife there, otters there. It's just beautiful, yeah.
And tell me about the movement. You make it sound almost like Tai Chi. Is it like it's a kind of a Zen practice, is it?
It is a Zen practice because when you start fly fishing, you'll find it very frustrating. But once you understand the process, you find that your body and the rod are at one. And it's the line that's doing the work and it's the movement of the line that is important. And it does become meditative. Sometimes when I'm fishing, I get more enjoyment out of a great cast I've made than any fish I've caught.
Yeah, yeah. And kind of almost like golf or Zen or whatever. If you're trying too hard,
you're
losing it. Yeah?
And that's the point. If you feel that you have to put effort into it, it's wrong. It's wrong, exactly. So I suppose, yes, it is a form of meditation, almost like Tai Chi in a way, yes.
Yeah, and so you talk about the it's obviously about being in the place as well and that sense of place. But fishing has brought you all over the world. What kind of places?
Yeah, well, again, I grew up next to the sea, so I've brought fly fishing, I suppose. I've gone back to fly fishing at sea and I've been fortunate, you know, to travel to the Kola Peninsula in Russia a couple of times with a great mentor of mine, Dave Whitran, who died there last year at age 103. He was a fantastic man. And went fishing right up into his hundreds. He was amazing. So the Kola Peninsula, I've been to Iceland. I had the joy of visiting Greenland as well, which was fantastic. I've done a little bit of fishing in West Africa, fly fishing in Gabon and in Guinea-Bissau, and then a little bit in Africa, Tobago, a couple of places like that. But the joy of fishing is that it brings you to new environments where you can appreciate the nature. As I said, the catching is, you know, the tug is the drug to an extent, but that's not my prime reason. I think the location and the nature. I mean, last year I was very fortunate to be in Setagama in Gabon and you know, to be fishing on a dark beach where pitch dark, stars above you, elephants behind you rustling 50 yards behind you in the jungle, a hippo snorting that you cannot see in front of you in the dark water, and the guide making sure that you don't go above your shins because there's some dangerous sharks there. It really was an electric experience.
Yeah,
it really
was. So are you going to kind of wildernesses?
Yeah, I mean, I think in Greenland, we certainly were in a wilderness. I think in Setagama, you're pretty much in the wilderness fishing as well. When we were in you know, Guinea-Bissau, we were out in an archipelago. Yeah, you're pretty much in the wilderness.
Okay, which is an amazing experience. So, in terms of then Ireland, have we embraced, when you see the ecotourism and the fishing tourism people are doing around the world, have we embraced that so much in Ireland?
I think we've lost a huge opportunity, and I think we have destroyed to a large extent the great jewel we had. And I think of places like the famous sea trout fishery in Loch Carryon and Waterville, essentially destroyed largely down to a salmon farm, I'd have to say. I think of some of our rivers and the way they've become degraded and polluted. And, you know, the recent Blackwater obviously been a very serious example of that. I think we've missed that trick. I think those rivers, which are not only just, they are the arteries of life, they're the sculptors of our land, but they were also the wild Atlantic way for many inland towns, their opportunity to thrive in angling. You know, an angler that...
Where are the magical places you've been in Ireland?
Oh, there's so many. I think anyone who's been to, you know, the Bundurha River off Delphi, that's a magical place. Even and the River Shore is a magical place. Stretches of my home river and the River Bandon, really beautiful places. Stretches of the Feel, the Boyne, my Visek Fakenter, Mancon McGann, Rare, and that beautiful programme he did that The Land Speaks. And he spoke of the River Boyne and the Goddess Boyne and our relationship with the river. And, you know, it's sad to see these rivers degraded.
So we need to maybe have a different mindset about what the rivers are to us and what they represent to us.
They are. They shouldn't be seen as sewers, as convenient ways, waterways to dump toxic chemicals in our wastewater into. They shouldn't be seen as just things to exploit. They should be seen as our actual sculptures of our country and the living arteries of our land. They're the highways of biodiversity that go through our country. And, you know, we need a new relationship with our rivers and waters.
Ronan Collins, that was beautiful and poetic and very thought-provoking. Thank you very much.